It's Multiply Weekend, and as you know, that's where we have a quarterly celebration of all things discipleship. So disciple making, stories of victory and of hope and of love that are coming out of this church. And so, it's the place where you're going to be challenged once a quarter mm-hmm. to make disciples of Jesus Christ and to do all that. Danielle wants me to talk into the microphone so that. She can't hear me.
Turn the volume up out there.
But Multiply Weekend is Woodland's way of saying that we're unashamed of the gospel and that mm-hmm. we're going to make and multiply disciples across this mountain. And then we finish up by having a meal together, which is really the only reason that you came.
Yeah. And it's important to me that we come back to this every 3 months because in the busyness of life and church, it's so easy to forget about the reason we're here. And in fact, that's what Mike and I are going to talk most about this morning is why we're here. And I'll tell you what, after a week like this week, which we're going to talk more about later, it makes you realize even more why we're here and how important what God has given us is to do. I'm actually going to leave the stage, and Mike's going to talk for a couple of minutes, which is going to be really cool for me. And then I'm going to come back up. But I wanted to clear something up really, really quickly because early in the week, I sent out a video that to most of you, many of you got it, not all of you got it. If you don't get our emails, by the way, like if you want our regular weekly or every couple of week update on what's going on around here, put that on your connection card and drop it in the box so that you're added to that list. I look around and I see a lot of faces. A lot of you are on it. Some of you aren't. So make sure you give us your email if you're not on that list. But I sent out this video because some really serious things had happened on this mountain and then the day after off of this mountain. And I wanted to talk about it. But the way I communicated it, I got a couple of phone calls and even one from an elder saying, "What happened? What happened to your family? You guys are moving off the mountain. You're leaving the church." No. Okay, it's not that, okay? So I just wanted to dispel that right now so we're not like, you guys aren't on like pins and needles waiting for me to like run out of here, okay? You guys are my family. As I told you guys last week or the week before, the weeks just run together sometimes, but you know, you guys have become our family, Aaron and I's family, and we love you, and we're planning on being around here for a very long time, okay? So stop thinking about those things, all right? So,
yeah. Ta-da. No more crying. All right. So good, just good to clear that up. My name's Mike. I'm Mike Lardy. Most everybody in here probably knows me. I wear, I guess, a lot of hats around Woodlands. I guess I'm known for doing like the graphics and the printed things that go in your hands every week and making sure the website has everything it needs to have on it and work with Daniel a lot. I'm your kids' counselor camp leader during VBS in the summer, which is always hectic and a blast. But really, what I do at Woodlands, the core of what I do is I direct discipleship. And so what that looks like for me is I research the Bible and I look for things that I can use in weekly materials that I can give to the group leaders. And so it's their job to facilitate discipleship within the home or wherever the coffee shop that they're meeting. But every week those groups meet and I provide the materials for them. And then on the tail end of that, after the groups meet, then I provide the coaching that is necessary to help them work through different challenges that happen from week to week. So that's actually the highlight for me, is to hear how it's going. And then I also get to share how my group goes as well. So that's who I am. I am discipleship at Woodlands, and you should be too. So what is Multiply? Well, Multiply, it's basically what happened when Jesus lived, ate, talked, taught, you know, worked alongside the disciples for 3 years, and then he told them, "What I have done for you, you guys now go and do for others. And the message of the kingdom that I have shared with you and that you have gotten practice with, sharing in all these villages and cities, now I'm going to send you to do that very thing in my place." And so basically accomplishing way more than Jesus could do as one man, he put that into his disciples, and that's how the gospel was meant to spread. God designed the good news of Jesus Christ to spread person to person to person until the entire earth has heard the gospel preached, and then that's when Jesus promised that he would come back for us. So that's what Multiply is, and that's why we celebrate it here once a quarter, and we we are all about multiplying our faith into the lives of others. So just a quick discipleship update for you guys. Last time I saw you was at the end of summer, and we had about 10 to 12 people on stage. I think 10 people made it, two were absent. And so that was just to wrap up a training that we had gone through throughout the summer. And they shared with you the many ways that their eyes were opened to the need for discipleship and also the biblical model that we have for carrying it out and the methods that we use to make disciples. And so the trainees came through, and then we graduated them and celebrated together. And that was an awesome time, and I'll always remember that. And so basically coming out of that, you know, it's really hard to start a group from scratch because you got to think of people that would be interested. Then you got to invest in them, and then you got to find out, you know, are they truly interested? And then you got to actually invite them. And so it just takes a long time. So out of all the people that graduated, we were able to start four groups, including mine, out of that initial group. And so the impact of that is about 20 people right now, which is really cool. And some of those people don't even go to Woodlands, which is even more cool. So so that's what's happening right now. And then coming in 2016 in January, another couple is going to launch their group. So that's two more. So that makes six. And our impact will just continue to grow from there. So I know a lot of you asked Daniel and I if we would do another training. And kind of the answer in August was, well, we don't know. Well, now we kind of know. we know we want to do one definitely. We don't know how it'll look. We went for 12 weeks last time, and we would meet once a week for 12 weeks. We're wondering if maybe if that didn't work out for everybody and summer didn't work out, if maybe a three-day weekend might possibly work out. We could do four sessions a day on a three-day weekend, so something like that might work. So so that's just keeping you guys up to speed with where discipleship is at, and we're off to a running start. And we're very excited, and we're very proud of everybody for supporting all that goes on in discipleship at Woodlands. So Daniel just asked me to share why discipleship matters. And, you know, Jesus gave us this work, but why does it matter today? And really, what's at stake if Woodlands does not become a disciple-making church? What are we risking there? So I came up with six different things that I wanted to share, and really what it comes down to is people need true believers in their life. People need true followers of Jesus Christ to come into their life and to walk with them and to give them the kind of friendship, the kind of accountability, the kind of support that they need, and to be able to ask and talk about the hard things in life. And so discipleship really comes down to accumulating these kinds of believers into your life, and that's the beauty of it, is people come into your life and invest in you, and it's so exciting to see your own faith grow and mature, and your life grow beyond what it could be on its own, and so that's really what it comes down to. People more or less, I would say, are in a process of falling apart. I mean, I know I'm a little bit better at hiding it than you guys. But, you know, there's just weeks where I'm falling apart, and this would happen to be one of them. And discipleship is what fills in the gap for us. Discipleship is people coming into our lives and people letting us know that it's okay. I'm here, I'm with you, and things are going to be all right. So it goes beyond the Sunday morning experience. So the second thing is that I've just noticed people... How do I say this? People are more connected than they've ever been at any point in history. I have hundreds of people in my contacts on my phone. I have probably hundreds more than that online. But people are more alone than they've ever been, I think. And it's quite an interesting paradox to have so much access and yet so little relatability. And so a really clear picture of this came to me when I was thinking of a friend of mine. She used to live, her and her kids and her boyfriend used to live right behind my old church in San Bernardino, in the apartments down there behind church. And she and I got to know each other because their kids would want to come play, and I would end up supervising them, basically. And so I got to know her, And it's just a really cool story. I'll tell that at some other point because it's really amazing how God put that together, that she considers me family. I consider her family. We visit each other. We're for each other in life's ups and downs. But I noticed a Facebook post that she put online last week, and it was on the heels of her daughter's first birthday, which, as you know, ladies, is a big deal, right? Daughter's first birthday. So she had this party, and she went all out for it, and people came, and there was some drama, and then people left, and then she got online, and she wrote a really long letter, and she just said, "Nobody comes to visit me. I'm all alone in my apartment, and nobody comes." And she got one comment on the post, and all it said was, "Yeah, I hear you, girl." Yeah. Doesn't make it any better, right? Doesn't make it any better. So what does she do? She gets on the phone. She calls me, and she just needs somebody to talk to. I don't relate to all the things that's going on in her life, but it doesn't matter. She just needs to talk, and she needs to know that I'm her brother, and that I believe that she can overcome all of these challenges, and that she can attract the kinds of friends that she wants in her life. And so we just talk through that, and then I get to see her, you know, every couple of weeks when I'm down in the area. I just drop by and see how she's doing. She calls my mom now. She loves hearing from my mom. People need to hear from you. And so that's why discipleship matters. We're alone. We're connected, but we're alone, and we need to not be alone. So the third thing is that people are very busy nowadays, busier than ever. The schedule, the calendar, it just fills up. And away you go, spinning like a top. People are busier than ever, but I would venture to say that most of us are busy doing things that don't matter for the kingdom. And the reason that happens is because we haven't left any room for it. We haven't carved out time for God to use us. We haven't allowed somebody close to us to say, "Hey, you're too busy. You need to make some time for things that matter." Discipleship means I get to ask you, "Hey, it looks like you're crowding God right out of your life. What's up with that?" That's a hard question to ask, but discipleship allows me to do that. There's trust within the relationship. Walking in the way of Jesus is discipleship, and that means that we make time for the things that he calls us to do. And so instead of trying to work longer hours, we edit our spending, right? And so churches, I believe, they don't have a problem with attendance, or they don't have a giving crisis when discipleship is firmly in place. When we see that disciples are making disciples, and the fruit of that ministry is growing, we see that people make time for the things of God, and that's super exciting, and so that's why we're committed to it. The fourth thing is that, you know what, people are just overwhelmed. And they need a voice of reason in their life to tell them, "Hey, there's all these demands. You can say no. You know, find the things that you want to say yes to that really matter and give that your best yes. And then that will enable you to more easily say no to all the things that come in." Because, I mean, if you're like me, I get overwhelmed every time an email comes in or a phone call comes in, and it's, "Hey, Mike, I need you to this. I need you to do that. I'm looking for this. Do you have that?" It's like, whoa, it's just so much, right? But if somebody's in my life, like disciples in my life, my guys are able to ask me every week, like, "Are you protecting your best yes? What, the things that you say yes to, are those the best things?" And so my guys are able to hold me to that. And that's just awesome, incredible things. It just allows me to declutter my life. The fifth reason that discipleship matters is because people need to know that they are cared for by people that they know and not strangers. And while it is very cool to have Daniel come over to your house or a pastor to come visit you in your time of need, that's a very cool thing. The reality is a lot of times the pastor doesn't know the real you, like maybe somebody else might, somebody who's with you in discipleship. They know the real you. And you can't sweep your all of your sins under these Christian slipcovers. You know, you just can't sweep them under that rug. they call you out into the light. And so people need to be discipled. People come into church, they don't know anybody, and they're able to fall out of the back door and nobody notice. And that's something we have to fight against. So discipleship works to fight against that. And the last thing is this. Churches need a much higher people-to-pastor ratio. And I believe these problems that we see in the church are turned around when there's a much lower ratio of people to pastors. And this idea came to me when I was actually with Deanna, with some friends, and they don't go to church anymore. Not our church, but they just don't go to church. They're kind of doing their own thing. And this thought kind of came to me because they were curious as to what I was doing and what we were doing. And this thought came to my mind that, okay, we're about to graduate, you know, 10, 12 disciple makers and release them to do ministry. But what that actually means is that the amount of people who have a pastor's heart for the people in this church has now gone up 10 times. And they really saw the power of that because, you know, effectively they're acting like pastors in the lives of the disciples in their group. They are teaching Bible content. They're asking relevant questions. They're finding out what's going on, that what's going to, what areas in their disciples' lives do they need for spiritual growth, for spiritual health. And then they're praying every week praying for their disciples, and they're acting like pastors to these people. And so I was just explaining, you know what? We went from having a church with one pastor and 70 people to having a church with 10 pastors, 12 pastors. And they saw the power of that. And so so that's the goal, is pushing leadership. The goal of discipleship is pushing leadership as far down into the church as it can possibly go. And so churches thrive when there's active discipleship. Churches don't have a leadership crisis when there's discipleship firmly in place. And so doing discipleship the way Jesus taught is the solution to putting the right people putting the right people in our lives, asking the right questions, and offering the right support. So the importance of this has, it's never been more obvious than this week. And so I'm gonna close right there and just let Daniel take it away. It's just so crucial what's going on. If we become a disciple-making church,
yeah,
we need to get there.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. I wanted you guys to get to know him more because, you know, he's second here at this church as far as leadership goes. And you guys don't see it like you see me, but he's really part of the glue that really holds this place together. I'm in one of those weird places right now where I have so much to say, but at the same time, I feel like I have so little to say. And I sent out that video to you and frightened some of you accidentally because something happened that involves people at this church this week. And I don't know any other way to do this than to just tell you the story. I went home Sunday afternoon, and I have to tell you, last week when I preached, it was a difficult chapter for me because I felt like it was things that I just say over and over again. But God is always so good and gracious to give me words to speak that even though I'm telling you the same thing, somehow God lets me say it in a way that's maybe different and more encouraging or challenging. And I was so encouraged when I left church on Sunday because I thought, man, that was a tough chapter for me to get through, yet I got through it and I felt like we were all encouraged by it. And so I just, you know what I did last Sunday afternoon, and I don't do this a lot, but I literally just sat on the couch all day. And it was just one of those days, and I was excited and happy and ready to get up Monday morning and start my task list. I don't know if you guys are like me, but I like have a list of 168 things I'm going to do next week. And how many did I get to? Like 3, right? You know. But I'm like, okay, I'm getting up early Monday morning and I'm going to hit it hard. I'm going to get to the honeydews. I'm going to do the church stuff, sermon done, and just on and on and on and on and on. I don't know what time it was, maybe about 8 a.m., 8:30 a.m. I get a text message from Daniel Mattis. It said, I'm just going to use the name. I was thinking I wasn't going to, but by now you guys have heard about this, and if you haven't, you're going to hear about it now. Hannah Craven passed away. And you may not know who Hannah Craven is, but let me tell you who Hannah Craven is. Hannah Craven is a 13-year-old girl who's coming to our youth group on Thursday nights, our Valor program, who had been coming faithfully since the beginning of this year. And her sisters came and her parents would come and hang out. In fact, if you saw them, you'd recognize them because they'd been visiting our church recently. And I can still remember standing at the kitchen stove because I was trying to be a good husband and I was cleaning. It didn't last long. And I just didn't even know. I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know what to do. And I was texting Danielle and Jason back and forth trying to find out if I figure out who this girl was and make sure it was who I was thinking it was. And I thought, man, I've got to call Norman Helen, you know, because they're the leaders of our Valor program on Thursday nights. And I thought that Hannah was in Helen's group originally, and I thought, man, Helen is just going to be devastated, which she was. And so I got Norm on the phone and was talking to them, and I said, I have some just awful news. And I said, you know, I said, Hannah Craven passed away last night, just breaking all of our hearts, and we talk about it a little bit. And then I find out that Hannah was actually in Carrie's group because she's one of our leaders at Valor. I don't know if you guys quite understand what happens at Valor, but what's happening at Valor is exactly what Mike talks about. We're taking these kids and teenagers and discipling them. And so all of these leaders here are in groups with four or five kids, and they're getting very direct communication and discipleship through these leaders. And I call Carrie, and you know what it's like when you get a phone call from the pastor. You don't think that there's anything wrong. You think you're in trouble. And that's what Carrie thought. I said, Carrie, I need to talk to you. And she said, well, how about this afternoon or tonight or tomorrow? I said, no, I need to talk to you now. And she's like, oh, great. And I said, I'd like to come over and talk to you, though, and I'm sure I'm glad I did and didn't talk to her on the phone. And then Norm texts me back and says, hey, Helen would really like to go with you. And so I get in the car and I drive down to Carrie's house, and Helen and I, we don't know what to say. What do you say? What do you say to someone like that they've invested their life into, and they love this girl like they're her own daughter? What do you say? And we stop a couple of steps before we get to Carrie's door, and Helen asked if we could pray, and we prayed right there, and Carrie's still thinking she's in trouble. we go inside and we sit down on the couch, and I'll tell you, I've never really been in that place before where I had to break news like that. And I just said, Carrie, I have some of the most difficult and awful news to tell you. I said, Hannah Craven passed away, and she was just devastated because she'd been walking through life with Hannah. She knew what was going on with Hannah in her family. She knew the struggle. She knew the ups. And that's discipleship right there. She knew the ups and the downs. And she was just absolutely devastated by that. Devastated. You know, every once in a while in life, and I'm only, I forget how old I am because I tell people after 25, it's not even worth counting anymore. You guys understand, right? I think I'm 33. But Erin would know if she was here, but she's in with the kids. You know, some things happen in life that rock your world forever. Forever. They change the way you think about something. And this week was one of those weeks. Everything changed the way that I was thinking. You know, I get so wrapped up like you guys do in the things of life. John, how should we set up the candles? John, can you play that song? Mike was talking about me, by the way, when he's talking about getting the emails from people who are needy. That's me. Mike, yes. You know, Mike, can you give me this? Can you do that? Can you do this? I get so wrapped in that stuff too. And you know what I realized this week? So little of what we do matters. So little of what we're concerned about matters. All these little things that we try to do in life to make things go, they have such little value. Do you know what I discovered this week, and that I think I'm going to hold on to forever, is that the only thing that really matters, none of this matters. It's a nice building. We're blessed to use it. It's great to come together. I love you guys like family, but do you know what matters? It's not the lights or the building. It's not the programs. It's not the services. What matters is you and me. People are what really matter. None of the rest of it is worth 2 cents anymore. When all of a sudden you realize that this person that was in your life, talking about Hannah, all of a sudden the next morning is not, does anything else in between matter? It doesn't anymore, does it? And it was one of those weeks because it didn't stop there, did it? Wednesday, I'm at Calvary Chapel Conference Center meeting with the family and trying to help them get their funeral plans together. And one of our, it wasn't my phone, funny enough, but one of the phones beeps and says, it's like you get little emergency alerts or something. There's an active shooter in San Bernardino. And you guys know the story. I don't need to tell the whole story. Do you know what matters? We get so caught up in the chase and the story and the TV broadcast. And do you know what matters? The people are what matter. Those 14 people and now their families are what matter. You see, you go through times like this in your life where one thing after another happens and things are being ripped out of your life, and you start to begin to realize what matters. It's not all the things that we spend all of our time and effort on. The things that matter are us and your neighbors and your family and your friend. We have got to wrap our minds around this, church. What matters is people. People are what matter. And it's interesting that this all fell together on a Multiply weekend where we're talking about discipleship, because I have cheerleaded and carried the banner for discipleship since day one in this church. And I'll tell you what, that is what matters, because that is about the people. That is stripping everything else away and taking care of people. You know, the week continued in a pretty ugly way for me, and I'm not going to share the rest of the week, but you know, it was just one of those weeks where I realized it doesn't even matter if I have anything written down to say to you this morning or not, because God is just going to be good and give me the words I need to say, because it's blank today. My week was so full with people that I didn't even have time to hardly write anything down this week. But that's okay, because you know what matters? People. It doesn't matter if I'm out until 10 o'clock at night. It doesn't matter if I have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. It doesn't matter if I have to go on a Friday or a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon, because you know what matters? People. And I want to challenge you with a couple of things, because I'll tell you, as sad as that conversation was with Helen and Carrie and Alex was there at the end, as sad as that conversation was, so many good things came out of this conversation. We sat and talked for 2 hours. It was sad and we cried. And then we laughed and we smiled. But there are three things that came out of that talk that I want to share with you, because they've been so encouraging to me. And I know as I shared them with you guys, Helen told me she's already been sharing them with other people. And the first one I already shared with you: people are what matters, church. So we've got to rearrange our lives and make sure the people that are in our lives are most important. That's number one. Because if the people in your life aren't what's most important, you're failing. Here's the second one, and I have to give Carrie some credit for this, because she said this. She said, if not now, when? If not now, when? If you don't take care of the people in your life now, when? If you don't invest your life into others now, then when? And you know what? The when of tomorrow or next week or next month, guess what? It might be too late. Part of me was unsure of whether I should share Hannah's story this morning, because I didn't want it to feel like I was using it for some sort of gain, but I have to tell you, talk about being woken up to that fact of if not now, when? Because sometimes that when doesn't wake up in the morning. Sometimes that when doesn't wake up in the morning. And so I would challenge you. I would just challenge you so much. And you know who it is in your life that God has placed in your life. You know if it's your husband or your wife or your friends or your family or your neighbor. You know who it is. You know them by name. You're seeing them in your head right now. You're seeing their face. If not now, when? Because we think in our little boxes of life that next week or next month or next year is when. Guys, if that's when it is, it's probably not going to happen. And you never know when the next time you wake up, that when is going to be too late. If not now, when? Take this seriously. Take this seriously with the people in your life. You know, Mike and I have worked so hard to come up with ways to disciple and training and curriculum to help you. But you know what? We would love to pass that on to you. But you know what every single one of you can do right now? You can just love people and spend time with them. You can turn the TV off. You can spend one less day out at the lake, two less hours watching whatever football games are on. Because if it's not now, when is it going to be? And that when may never come. Here's the third thing I want to share with you this morning, and it's kind of silly and also so appropriate at the same time. You know, I think it was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, my wife and I took our kids to see that new Peanuts movie. You know, it was a little nostalgic for us, you know, because we grew up watching all the holiday Peanuts shows, and so we wanted to take the kids, and it was funny, and it was entertaining, and we laughed, and as I'm watching this movie, there's just this one really quick scene with Charlie Brown and Linus. You know, Linus is one of Charlie Brown's friends, and you know, Charlie Brown's always the hard luck kid. You know, he can't kick the football, he can't fly the kite, you know, he can't tie his shoelaces off only down. You know, that's Charlie Brown, right? And so this whole story progresses, but the side story is that Charlie Brown cannot fly a kite without getting it stuck in this one tree. And they show this picture of the tree, and it's just full of all of Charlie Brown's broken kites. And so it's the middle of winter, and all the kids are playing in the snow, and they're ice skating on a frozen lake, and here comes running by Charlie Brown in the snow and in the ice, you know, and he's slipping, he's sliding, and they all stop and watch. They say, there's Charlie Brown again, flying his kite, you know, and he's getting close to that tree that had stolen his kite over and over again. And sure enough, the kite gets stuck with the other 16 that are in there. And they all just shake their heads and go back. They all just shake their heads and go back to what they were doing. And for this quick second, Charlie Brown and Linus have this amazing exchange of conversation that's meaningless to anyone, except it had the most profound impact on me. And you know, when it first happened, I was talking to Mike about it, and I was like, Mike, this has to do with discipleship. Mike, this has to do with the church. You know what this has to do with? This has to do with Hannah and Hannah's story and what you're experiencing right now. You know, they're talking, and Charlie Brown is saying how much of a failure he is and how much he's messed up. And Linus looks at Charlie Brown and he says, Charlie Brown, the only thing that matters now is the courage to continue. Charlie Brown, the only thing that matters now is the courage to continue. Church, after a week like this, I have to tell you that the easiest thing to do would be to pack it in. You deal with a death of a young girl, you watch what's happening in our world, and it's not just our world anymore, now it's on our doorstep. Not to mention the 101 things that are going on in every one of your lives that you don't get to stand up here and say like I do. And the easiest thing to do would be to pack it in and say, I'm out of here. I'm moving on. I'm moving out. I'm done. But the only thing that matters now for this church is having the courage to continue with what we're doing. Because if we don't have the courage to continue in the mission of Jesus Christ and seeing the gospel multiplied, if we don't have that courage, then who will? One of my favorite mission organizations, it's the one in San Francisco that I tell you about all the time. One of their slogans is, if we won't go, who will? We can't pack it in. We can't allow our hearts to be so broken. We can't allow ourselves to be so devastated that we cannot continue. Because if we don't continue, then there's not people like Norm and Helen and Carrie and Shanda and Elton that are working with these young kids and these teenagers. There's not disciple makers like Mike and Paul and Dee and Alex and Helen as well. And my wife, if we don't continue, if we don't go, who will? We are here for a reason. And here's something for you to think about. Hannah was here for a reason. I don't know if you've figured that out yet, but I have to tell you that we must have spent 45 minutes talking about this. So sad that Hannah is gone, ripped out of our life. But if we wouldn't have been here, who would have been? And for those months while she was here, she heard about Jesus Christ every night. And she loved Jesus and she loved God. And we know that. We know that because, you know, a couple of weeks ago she was here at church. And I've got the card in my truck still. I wanted to give it to the parents. I just haven't done it yet. She turned in a connection card. And it said she wanted to be baptized on it. You know what? It doesn't matter now because here's the joy of this. We're all here crying like big babies, and she's up there. And those burdens that she had, they're gone. And she's experiencing peace and joy like we've never experienced in our life. But while we're here, while we're still so unlucky to be here, if I will, we have to make sure we realize that people are what matter. And we have to be ready to go now, not later, but we have to go now. If not now, then when? And even in light of a heavy subject that is a burden and painful, I cried like a baby this morning with Mike Lardy. We were going over what we were going to say in that room, and I said, Mike, can you get me a Kleenex? We have to have the courage to continue because that's what matters. And you know what? That's what would be the most honoring to God. That's what he would want of us. And I'll tell you what, that's how Hannah's story lives on, is that we don't quit. We continue on. And so I want to give you a couple of ways to respond to this. And it's interesting how God brings things together. It's just so interesting how God brings things together and the timing he brings them together on. The first one is this, is that today, don't let another day go by, don't let another hour go by without going after that person that God has laid on your heart. You can't let it go by any longer. You just can't wait because you don't know when too late is too late. So don't let it go by. Okay? I know in your mind right now you're thinking of a name or you've got the face of someone. Don't let another moment go by. Don't let another hour or day go by because you never know when it's too late. And as much as Mike and I would love to share with you about discipleship and teach you how to do that better, you guys have it in you. You guys can love people. You can care for people. You can tell people the most basic stories from the Bible. You don't need me to do that, to teach you how to do that. We'd love to come alongside of you eventually, but you can do that today. Here's the second thing that I want to mention to you today, and it's a total coincidence that we're doing this today and all this happened this week. A total coincidence. And actually, it's not a coincidence. I think God just worked this together. You know that Valor program we run on Thursday nights? It's fantastic. It's not without problems. We have our struggles. But every week, week in and week out, anywhere from 20 to as many as 40, maybe even sometimes 50 kids pour into this little tiny building. We tear up the grass outside and we leave a mess. We make stains in the carpet and I get mean phone calls. But you know what? I'll tell you, I realized this week how important that program is. Because without that program, there would have never been Carrie and Hannah. Without this church going out on a limb and saying, we're going to do this, even though we really can't pay for it, even though we really don't have the volunteers we need for it, we're going to do it because this community needs it. And I'll tell you what, is it not more obvious that that community needed it than right now? Hannah and her family live a quarter of a mile from here. We are here on Thursday nights for this community so that we can connect our lives with the youth and the children of this community. And not only is it working, but really if you think about it, it's a matter of life and death. Because if we weren't here again, who would be? And the answer is probably no one. And so I want to ask you for help on something. We need help with the Valor program, and week after week it seems like I'm asking for volunteers, but this is different. That Valor program is expensive to run. We buy all kinds of curriculum. The kids get uniforms and shirts. They go on field trips. They get to go to camp. It's incredible. It really is incredible. But we need financial help and support. And we also need you to partner with us who are discipling these young and women in prayer. And so what we're asking is that if you're able during this time of year to sponsor a child from our program. And so on your way in today, you probably saw that table set up out there. We took pictures of all or most of the kids that are here on a Thursday night. And we put their name on it and their age. And we had all the kids write a little bit of story about their life and where they live and who they live with. And we want to ask you to sponsor a kid in two ways. In prayer. And I'll tell you what, coming into this before this week, I would have said, the most important thing is we need financial support. But I'll tell you what, now after the events of this week, I'd say probably what we need more than anything is prayer support. And the three main leaders of it right there shaking their heads, yes. You need to be praying for these kids with us. And we'd also like you to support a kid if you're willing. And so there's a couple of different ways to do this, and I just want to explain it to you real quick. And then Norm and Helen are going to be out there after service if you have any questions about any of the kids or about the program. There's a bunch of cards like this, and they just have the kid's name on it and who they live with and where they live. And we're asking you to select one to take this home and put it on your refrigerator and pray for them. And then secondly, we're asking you to sponsor them to be in this program. We've kind of done the calculations, and it costs about $100 for a kid to go through this program September through June. It costs about $100 to get a uniform for them, to put the materials in their hands that they need, to take them on outings and camping trips and things like that. And so if you're able to do that, that would be awesome. There's also a second level, and the second level is $198, and what that extra $100 does is it helps send the kids to camp. My kids went to camp this year for the first time, and it was a life-changing experience for those kids. Kids gave their life to Christ. Kids made big decisions at camp, and they do camp just right up here in Crestline. That $100 goes a long way in helping the child that you pick get to camp in the summertime. And so there's two options, $99 to sponsor them for the program, $198 to sponsor the program and the camp. And if you want to do both, but it's kind of a hard time of year, you can just check the bottom box, and you can do the 99 now, and then we'll send you a letter later on about camp and see if you're able to help with camp at a later time. And if you can't do it today, that's okay. If you want to pick a kid today because it's on your heart, but you're not able today to write the check or whatever, just over here you can just check, I'll pay later, and we'll just send you a letter in the mail and just remind you. I'll tell you, I was so worried that this was going to sound like a sales pitch, but it's never been more real than it is this week. Because all of a sudden we have a face to put with a mission of that program. We have Hannah's face. Hannah got to come here, experience Christ, and have a real relationship with someone who could help and encourage. And that's worth far more than $100. In fact, it was worth her life. Because now she's in heaven, partially because she got to come here and be a part of what we're doing here. And so I'd really encourage you to do that. My wife and I are going to be sponsoring kids that are not our own. And I want to encourage you to do that because it's going to make a big difference in someone's life. Let me bring this back around now. I think I say this relatively often, but I want to say it again. It's so easy for me to stand up here and spill my guts of what I want to say to you every week. It's so easy. And I want you to know that I realize when I look into your eyes and your faces that there's so much going on with you that I don't even know about. And we all carry burdens, like I'm carrying right now for the Craven family, like I'm carrying right now for the people in San Bernardino, like I'm carrying right now for others in our church. But you guys have all of those same things too. And you know what the beauty of Jesus Christ is? Is that he knew that those burdens in our life were going to be so heavy that he said, just give those to me and I'll take those burdens. and you follow me because my burden is light and my yoke is easy. And so right now, I want to encourage you to just kind of lay everything else I've said to the side for these moments. And I want to encourage you in these moments, for whatever you're dealing with, to seek the grace of God in that, and to seek the freedom in that, and to seek the removal of your burden for that. Because I know that's what I need. And I know that's also so much of what so many of you need. And so we're going to go to communion. And I want you to spend a couple of moments just quiet. And I want you to spend a couple of moments just reflecting on what's going on in your life. And whatever those burdens are, whatever those troubles are, whatever those problems are, whether there's something I'm talking about or something totally different, I want to just tell you, give it up. Just give it up to Him. And find the grace and the freedom and the removal of the burden that God wants to give you. And so spend a couple of moments in communion, in prayer, and then come to communion as you feel led. And I fully realize that church services like this aren't exactly ones where you want to just jump up and shout for joy. But you know what? We really should. Because as much as we're burdened, she's not. And God will give that to you right now if you seek after Him. So after you spend a couple of moments with the Lord and in communion, let's sing out to our God who is so good, even in the midst of so many trials. Because even in these trials, you know, even for me, with the burdens and the trials of this week, one thing that I think I told the elders this the other night when we were meeting is that I'm so joyful because even in these darkest of circumstances, God is connecting me with these people that I have the opportunity to love and disciple. And there's something joyful there. So let me pray. Come to communion as you feel led. Spend a couple of moments in worship, and then we'll have lunch together afterwards. So let me pray. Oh, Father, a heavy week. Father, a heavy week. And Father, I know that from row to row to row, from pew to pew to pew, Father, I know that I can barely even begin to feel the heaviness that some people in this room are feeling. But Father, I pray in these moments, God, as I prayed this morning, I pray in these moments that your Spirit in this room would fall afresh on us. I pray that a spirit of comfort, a spirit of peace, and Father, even though I didn't do a very good job of bringing joy this morning, I pray that your Spirit would bring joy in these moments. And Father, with all of the burdens that are around this room, Father, I just pray that you would give us the courage, you would give us the heart just to turn them over to you. And Father, I pray that you would just remove them, that we would just feel that weight of the hundreds of pounds just being pulled off of our back, God, as you pour out your grace upon you, upon us. And so, Father, I pray that we would experience that this morning. We'd experience the freedom from our burdens, the freedom from our trials, and the freedom from the pain, Father. And Father, one thing I have left out, Father, I pray for that dear family. And Father, that is a quarter of a mile from here right now, I pray, God, that as you pour out your Spirit of comfort and peace in this room, Father, I pray it would overflow. I pray it would overflow into their lives and into their hearts. And Father, that even in these moments, that they'd be experiencing supernatural comfort and peace, not because of us, but because you are just so good. Father, remove the burdens. Bring joy. May your Spirit fall and fill this place. I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.